where I think the alpha lies is in building the teams. We have a big focus on that and trying to find people who were all rowing in the same direction with.
Yeah.
I find that super important. When you know you have a good team, when one person on the team doesn't like the decision, but everybody else does, and they are rowing even faster in the same direction that everybody else is.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Dr. Joseph Ryan Smolarz is the founder of STOR, that's spelled, S-T-O-R. He leverages his experience as an entrepreneur and otolaryngology practitioner to guide people toward financial sovereignty. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sam. This is going to be great.
Absolutely. The pleasure is mine, Ryan. There are three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
I started in 2017. I realized that going from room to room as a doctor wasn't going to allow me to retire. And once I decided that, I ended up in a month, I was sitting at a desk in an MBA program in Miami. And so we decided to get into commercial real estate. We built an assisted living home and started an e-commerce company. Like a lot of people, kind of diversified out. And now we're sort of de-diversifying, if that's a word, I'm not even sure, down into more of a focus. And self-storage is certainly one of those. And where we're going, we want to do right by our investors, raise capital and buy self-storage facilities and, do the best we can for our people, our investors, the people who believe in us and treat us well.
Got it. Now, you're an ENT and you decide that you want to do, you said, hey, going room to room as a doctor isn't really going to lead us to where we want. So you went to get your MBA.
Yeah.
Sounds like more education. I mean, you're already super highly educated. So hey, what was the kind of thinking there, the thought process there, and how did getting an MBA lead you to real estate?
Yeah. So what happened was I woke up one morning and decided I wanted to go on a surf trip. And I had no idea how to get into my bank account to see if I had enough money. I didn't even know what bank we banked at. So my wife took care of all of that. And so I realized that, you know what, maybe money is not fun tickets and I should probably take it a little more seriously, right? So doing the things that I do, I sort of take it to the extreme. And I was like, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go all the way. So let's learn how to do business and the whole bit. And the next month I was in that MBA program and kind of spiraled from there. I realized that I really liked it. And in that moment, I became an investor instead of a consumer. And I can tell you that that was one of the most powerful things that's ever happened to me. Of course, my children's birth and raising them and my wife and the relationships, but just the outlook on life. My thought process sort of switched from thinking about, watches or cars or whatever it was to solving the world's problems and capitalism and, how can we take those thoughts and, do something with them and change the world for better. And it was life changing.
Do you feel like you, and I'm going to, I guess when I say this, I don't think of higher education as a place where people typically get enlightened to go be an entrepreneur, even in the MBA program. Was it just the right school, the right timing? Was it the right people? Like what was the confluence of things that occurred to really inspire this in you?
Yeah. So, I was starting from absolute zero. I didn't know, how a bank worked. I didn't know what an interest rate was really. I mean, we had a mortgage on our house, but, I was like, it could have been 12, 15, 100. It wouldn't have changed anything for me. I didn't really grasp the concept of, what that meant. And, once I figured out that, if you do understand business and you can you can put these ideas into fruition, that there was always a place that there was like this itch I was trying to scratch, and I never could figure out what it was that was off. And almost instantaneously when I made that jump, it was completely different. Like, I didn't have that feeling anymore. And so, yes, the MBA program was really meant for people who are in that, you know, business corporate ladder, but I just used the information in a totally different way, right? I just took what they were telling me and applied it to where I wanted to apply it. And it really worked out perfectly.
That's awesome. So you've gone from a guy that doesn't even know where he banks to now running funds, buying self-storage, raising capital. I mean, being very, very in the weeds in the finances.
Absolutely. Yeah, we did it, man.
That's awesome. So what, outside of the MBA program, how did you then take the next steps to figure out? I know you mentioned e-commerce business, you mentioned some other things along the way, but kind of give us the modified version of what happened over the last 6 years to get you where you are now.
Yeah. So I'd always had these ideas in my head about things that I wanted, the bucket list, right? What are the things in life that I want to accomplish? And I had these ideas for some patents. And so, you know, one day I just said, you know what, we're going to write these patents and we're going to push it through the system and see what happens. And so we did. Got a patent attorney and started having the conversations and wrote two patents. One of them is supposed to launch the product here in a couple of weeks. It's been, you know, almost 5-6 years of in production.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, once I figured out that Wall Street sort of has this language that they don't want retail to know what it means, and that, you know, I've been through medical school, got the anatomy under my belt, learned Latin and, you know, all the things that were really difficult to learn, I said, you know what, I think that, you know, the stereotype of doctors not being able to learn this stuff is just garbage. It was the same thing in flying a plane. People told me that I couldn't be a pilot. I said, that's just garbage. So I'm going to go learn how to do it. And, you know, being a contrarian, and it's just sort of the way I think, and the, you know, you tell me I can't do something, okay, well, that means that I'm going to do it if I want to, right?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it.
I would imagine then that being a contrarian, again, in a field where everybody kind of has to play by the rule book, has been helpful for you because you stand out, no?
Yes and no. There have been certain times where that has certainly worked not in my favor. But from making that switch from, you know, this ultra conservative profession to quite the opposite, you know, where the world is your oyster kind of scenario, it was an easy transition for me because it was hard for me to sort of fit into that box. I just never been that kind of guy. And so, you know, I would come in and say, why don't we do this in surgery? I think it'll work a lot better. Oh, that's not what the books say, right? And so I pushed it a little too far on occasion with those, you know, mentors and things like that. But I think that, you know, hard work, dedication, that's never been a problem. They knew I was working hard, but, you know, it just kind of, it fit my mentality so well to make that sort of jump.
That's cool. Tell me, how did you get to today? You are through Store, which again is STOR. What is it? Store Partners, you said, was the website. Is that right?
Storepartners.com. Yes. STORpartners.com.
Storepartners.com. You have to go check that out. How did you get into what you're doing now? Because even being in real estate, this is yet another, and it sounds like you love to learn. That's one thing I've picked up from our conversation is that I think calling you a lifelong learner is probably an understatement, but you know, what you're doing now is even a unique subset of commercial real estate. So how did you get into what you're doing now?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, I remember where I was. I was driving to the airport and there happened to be a podcast on, and I was getting done with my training through the MBA. And I really didn't want that to fall to the wayside. I was pushing hard to try to use that, if nothing else, the mindset. And so there was a guy on there talking about self-storage. And I thought, you know, my life is so complicated that what I want to do is to find an asset class that is the most that I can find that's not complicated. And, you know, people say that you can look at your set of keys and figure out how complicated your life was. I looked down at my seat and there was like 300 keys on my passenger seat. And I said, man, my life is super complicated. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go buy a concrete slab with a metal box. And we're going to do that. And I went online, tried to find the best person to learn from that I could in the world. And that's kind of how I do things. Like, you know, I love mentor programs. I love coaching programs. You know, I want to learn from the best. And I always feel like if I don't, then what did I miss? So I ended up in this group and I've been there since 2018. We started in 17 because I got in a limited partner deal to try to learn. And it's just grown over the time and, you know, got to know and respect the guys in the group. And so it's almost a lot of, you know, it's as much fun as learning going on a quarterly basis up there to see them.
Right. I bet it is. So you stayed in the self-storage lane the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's impressive. Literally hats off to you. That's impressive. I mean, there's temptation, and I only speak from personal failure on this front, but I'm sure over the years you've had some really great deals come across your desk and unique opportunities that were outside of the slab in a box methodology that you've have been employing. How have you said no to those?
Well, there's been some times where I have, and you know, it was basically friends and family flipping homes. I said, okay, well, here's some capital, go for it. Right. But I'm just not interested. I don't know it. I could probably underwrite it, maybe, but it's a headache, right? I mean, it's just like, it's much easier for me to take a self-storage deal, look at the number of, you know, what they're selling it for square feet. I know the ins and outs. It's kind of like Warren Buffett. You know, you call him up and 5 minutes later, he knows if he wants to do the due diligence and put it under contract. You know, it's just, it's the experience, it's the knowledge, it's knowing who's in the business, knowing who to call. I mean, it makes me want to vomit to try to relearn all that, right? It took me a lot of time to figure that out.
No doubt on that front, in that kind of learning that those soft skills to where you can have a deal sent to you, and within just a few quick, you know, glances, you're like, yes, no, or maybe investigate further. I mean,
yeah,
that's a hard-earned skill set. And even yesterday, I had a broker send me a deal, and I just called her back and said, hey, you know what? If I offer on this, it's going to be less than one half of what the list price is. And here's three key reasons why. If you want to draw it up, knock yourself out. But that's about where I'm going to be. And she, you know, she understood it, but having that innate kind of, you know, built-in understanding of what it takes to make those sorts of deals go around is really, really powerful. So you are a full-time ENT. Like, you work really hard during the week. You are running your, and tell me, what is the structure, current structure of what it is that you do? Are you guys running a fund? Are you doing a deal by deal syndication? What is that?
Yeah. So it's a series LLC. So there are barriers between each deal. So if you invest in one deal, it's not a blind pool. It's basically a syndication under a holding company is really what it is. So syndication on syndication on syndication. And so going through that process, my main focus these days is the fund manager role of a fund. That's sort of where my passion lies, and to be able to, you know, to do all of those components, which is super fascinating to me and super boring to everybody else. I absolutely love it. And so to be able to do that in self-storage, which I have a fair knowledge base on, and bring in the right people, it's just been it's been fabulous and almost, well, it is life-changing for me.
Right. Does that, what was I going to ask you on that? It was, oh, are you guys allocating capital? Are you guys actually buying the deals yourselves and running them?
Yeah, so it started off as allocating capital. We were almost like a debt fund for equity. That's how I can describe it. But now we've moved into our own space. We have a acquisition team that we're building, and we're gonna do it all in house under under our roof. And you know, if there's a development deal and we decide to JV with another sponsor or firm, then so be it. But right now we're focused on acquisition, and that's sort of where the bread and butter lies for us.
What has been probably the number one lesson, or maybe the hardest thing that you've had to solve in growing a business like what you're doing right now?
Oh, it's certainly, well, one thing is timing, like when the capital comes in versus when the deal closes, and trying to make all that work is sometimes just torture. But the other thing that I think is more kind of, you know, the 30,000 foot view where I think the, you know, the alpha lies is in building the teams. We have a big focus on that, and trying to find people who were all rowing in the same direction with.
Yeah,
I find that super important. You know, when you know you have a good team, when one person on the team doesn't like the decision, but everybody else does, and they are rowing even faster in the same direction that everybody else is.
What do you, when you, can you explain that a little bit further? If what I heard was you saying that you may have a team member that doesn't necessarily agree with the decision, but yet is still meaningfully participating and helping everybody push in that direction. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it may be me that disagrees and the other part, people on the team want to push forward. It really depends on the scenario, but if you're out in the middle of the ocean, everybody thinks that, you know, North America's to the left and Asia's on the right, and you got to get to the place that's closest. If everybody wants to go to the right and you want to go to the left, and the decision's made, you paddle as hard as you can and to the right, and
right.
You know, you're all in. So this is you know, a team sport. It's not an individual sport, and it's full contact. There is no doubt about it. Commercial real estate's full contact sport.
It is indeed. You're based in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Where do you guys buy? And I'm imagining that you're not buying all right there in the Virgin Islands.
No. Nope.
So how do you do that?
Yeah. So we spend hours and hours talking about our buy box, and it's constantly changing, right? Mm. What do we buy? Right now it's over 20,000 square feet. It's in the Sun Belt states, and only states that we feel are good for business. As you can just take property taxes, right? We have, and we look across our portfolio, and you can just look at that line item on the due diligence on the P&L, and you can almost tell, right? Looking back, one place will be three times more than the other one, right? With the market rates being fairly similar. And just with that data point alone, hey, you know what? We're going to the one that's more business friendly.
Yeah, there's no doubt behind your principal and interest payments, property taxes are probably going to be your second greatest expense. Unfortunately, generally, that you can do nothing about. You can contest, but you know, good luck if you just bought it and they reassess at your latest sale price. Depending
yep.
on what the state is. So that's, what's that now?
Oh, we look a ton at dividing up the goodwill, you know, for those purposes. So we don't get hit with that extra income that's just for goodwill. It's not on the property. We have a person we're going to have on the podcast, I think it's next Wednesday, who not only does cost eggs, but he fights property taxes on the increases. Like, that's his job. And so we keep him very busy. And it's awesome. And, you know, I hope he never retires.
Tell me about building team. I guess, you know, again, building it remotely. You guys, I'm sure you still have staff at the front desk at these facilities? Maybe you don't. I don't know. You could, maybe if you can break down a little bit of your kind of operations and how you guys run that from so far away.
Yeah, so a lot of it in self-storage. I mean, these are C+, B- facilities. There's a few of them that have management on site, but not many of them. A lot of it's done remotely. We have the term chief pretty officer. So there is someone that at least goes by once or twice a week to make sure that there's no garbage on the ground, that the lawn people who are coming by to keep everything up. There are instances where, we get calls and say, hey, we need a locker. Like, okay, the keys are in the back right corner, right? Move your stuff in and, here's the way you pay. So there's components of it that are, offsite, onsite. It really just depends on the facility and what works for the community and all the things.
Yeah, self-storage has been a hot asset class for a number of years. How are you guys finding deals that pencil in today's interest rate and also competitive, buying environment?
Yeah, so our last deal was bought on seller financing at a cumulative rate of about 2.8%. That definitely helps it pencil. There's no doubt about it. We love Utah. A lot of it's this marketing engine that I talk about ad nauseum over and over. It's, having dialers and bringing deals to the table where really our focus is to close that deal where everybody wins, right? Because what we don't want is our name to get out there as sort of a firm that's trying to squeeze. So there's certainly times we leave some on the table to keep that reputation intact. We love to keep up with our sellers, to see what they're doing. And, when I'm in the town of a previous owner, then, maybe we'll go to dinner or something like that. We're really not in the commercial real estate business as far as I'm concerned. We're in the relationship building, that's what we do is build relationships. And, I think that goes a long way. And with you, if you go into, a negotiation with that in mind is how can we all win walking away from the table? I think that's powerful. And I think that brings, sort of a little bit of a competitive advantage to our group.
It takes time and effort to build those types of relationships. What would you say your average from the first day you look at a deal and say, I'm interested in that, to when you finally get a deal closed? Do you think your number of days in kind of transaction or considering a transaction to getting it closed is longer than other people's cycles, maybe?
Maybe. It's tough for me to say. I mean, I'm in contact with quite a few firms that are doing the same thing. I would assume that we're a little bit outside the norm, just on the real front end of building that rapport. But with our, standard operating procedures in place, I think we catch up on that a little bit as we go through the deal.
Right. No, that makes sense. And I'm not suggesting that's a bad thing. I was just thinking that, if you're thinking about employing this, which it sounds like an incredibly sound strategy, but that you just need to know that you need to put the time in. I guess it's a short summary there is that this takes time to build those relationships, but it does pay off there in the long haul. So that's very, very cool. Ryan, we've talked about a lot of things, everything from kind of your story as an ENT, going to school, how you got involved in commercial real estate. I love the singular focus that you've had over the last seven years now. And just kind of how you've built out your company, the way you guys are finding opportunity right now. So much here to learn. One thing we didn't talk about was that you have your own podcast. So if you're listening to this, check out Ryan's Medicine and Money show. If I had the pleasure of being on that show at one point, so check that out. That's also another way that you can connect with Ryan. If our listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more about you, what are some other ways they could do that?
Yeah, so on our website, storepartners.com, there's a button you can click, and that will take you directly to our Calendly, and you can have a conversation with us. A lot of our focus on these calls is about if we can provide value and some sort of education, you know, not necessarily pushing to, you know, come into one of our deals. To me, if a person's not comfortable with the investment, it really may not be the right time or place to place that capital. And so we really focus a lot on that. We love talking to, you know, the potential investors, CPAs or financial advisors or whoever the case may be. So, you know, bring it. And, you know, we will do our best to answer every question that comes up. I'm on LinkedIn, Joseph Ryan Smolarz. You can check me out. Yeah, that's probably the two best places.
Sounds like a winner. Ryan, thank you again for coming on the show today. I certainly appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.